Good evening. I'd like to call this City Council study session to order for Tuesday, January 24th, 2023. The first item on our agenda is the annual comprehensive financial report and auditor's reports, and I am going to turn it over to our finance director, Kay Neese.
Good evening, and thank you. So every year, the presentation of the audited city's financial statement is the culmination of extensive work performed by the finance department, and in particular, the work of Carrie Seams, the city accountant, who is sitting next to me, as well as Amanda Corrigan, our staff accountant, who is directly behind me in the audience. We are also joined tonight by Jamie Wilkie, who is the partner of the accounting firm Lauterbach & Amen, which performs the city's audit. And I will now turn it over to Carrie Seams, who will give a summary of the financial statements.
Good evening. As Kay mentioned, I'm Carrie Seams, the city accountant, and I am proud to report that once again, we have received a clean audit opinion on our financial report. And so with that, I will begin discussing the financial highlights of this year, of this year's report that ends fiscal year June 30th, 2022. If you're following along by hard copy, this is the very large bound report. If you're following along electronically, it begins on page 7 of the PDF. So on page 21 of the hard copy, 34 of the PDF, you will find the management discussion and analysis. This is basically the entire 200 plus page document condensed into a 16 page easy to read summary. There's good financial analysis, comparative year over year information, and I always recommend that if there's anything in all of the report that you read, that it be this section. If you skip ahead a few pages to page 39 of the hard copy, 52 of the PDF, you will find the statement of net position. The statement of net position is similar to the balance sheet of a business. It has all funds of the city combined. It shows total assets, including infrastructure, as well as the total liabilities, so our debt, our pension liabilities, and the difference between those two is reported as net position. This just provides a good overall snapshot of the city's finances. So you will see total assets of $634.9 million, total liabilities of $256.6 million, resulting in an ending net position of $378.3 million. And of that amount, $326.4 million is invested in capital assets. If you move ahead just one page, you will find the statement of activities. This is similar to the income statement of a business. It's got all funds of the city, all the revenues, all the expenditures. And this shows how that net position changed. So this year you will see there was an increase in net position of almost $28.5 million. This was primarily attributed to over $12 million that we received in federal American Rescue Plan Act funds in the current year, as well as increased sales, food and beverage, and income taxes due to increased spending post-COVID by consumers, as well as record high corporate profits. Moving ahead a few pages to page 47 of the hard copy or 60 of the PDF, you will find the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balances for our governmental funds. Our governmental funds include our general fund, as well as all of our capital funds, where we save up fund balance to fund future capital projects. You'll see that there was an increase this year of $28.2 million in our governmental funds. Most of that was attributed to the general fund, so there was an increase of almost $22.8 million in our general fund. Once again, that was attributed to the receipt of those ARPA funds that I previously mentioned, as well as increased hotel motel, food and beverage, sales, income taxes, all related to that increased economic activity that we're seeing post-COVID. I do want to point out the majority of these funds are already earmarked in the current fiscal year for programs related to the community gun violence reduction blueprint, as well as housing insecurity and the lighting project in our Garden Hills neighborhood. Moving ahead a few pages to page 53 of the hard copy or 66 of the PDF, you will find that same exact statement, except this is for our proprietary funds. Our proprietary funds are those funds that operate like a business where charges for services are expected to cover costs. So this would be our parking, our sewer, and our environmental services funds. You will see that there was an increase of almost $1 million in the proprietary funds, and most of that was attributed to increases in our parking fund. So over these last couple of years, we've seen major decreases in our parking revenues due to employers having employees working remotely, so they weren't renting spaces in the downtown parking deck, and just overall decreased activity. People were out and about because of the pandemic. But this year, we started to see things kind of return back to normal, and so we're starting to see increases in those revenues once again. The next thing that I will cover begins on page 160 of the hard copy or 173 of the PDF, and this is information on our pension funds. So what I want to point out here is if you look at the bottom right-hand corner, you will see the funding percentage of our police pension fund is at 77.48%. And moving along one page, the fire pension fund is at 63.74%. These percentages decreased quite a bit this year, mainly due to investment performance because of market conditions. However, the city always funds well in excess of what we are required to fund by state statute. So those funding percentages are still much higher than the downstate average for public safety pension funds. That downstate average this year was 54.71%. So we're still well above that. Moving ahead to page 168 of the hard copy, 181 of the PDF, you will find our budget to actual statements. So these statements show how we performed relative to budget. They show the original budget, the final budget, and then the actual results by line item. And there is an individual fund statement for every fund of the city that's in this section. The last piece that I will cover in this report begins on page 229 of the hard copy, 242 of the PDF, and this is the statistical section. So this is just a good spot for trend information that goes back 10 years. So there's financial information, things like revenue, total revenues and expenditures, sales tax data, as well as demographic information, unemployment rates, median income of our residents, as well as operating statistics. So the number of fire calls that we went on, the number of potholes that we repaired this year, all of that is included in this section. So the last thing that I will cover is one of the smaller separate bound reports, begins on page 287 of your PDF. And this is our single audit report. So our single audit report is our audit of our federal grant funds and whether we're in compliance with those grant guidelines. So you will see on page 2 that the federal awards expended this year totaled $11,707,546, which was a large increase from the prior year, and that was due to those federal ARPA funds that I've mentioned. And then the last thing is on page 10, and this is the report from the auditors, that there were no findings or question costs on any of our federal awards this year. And with that, I will turn it over to Kay Neese to cover the management letter.
Good evening. So the management letter begins on page 298 of that PDF, and it is once again one of those separate smaller reports. So we receive this letter from the auditors every year, and it's basically just a summary of the information that the auditors would like council and management to know. We have the same comments as last year, which is fairly typical. The first comment is on how the actuarial reports that are used in the city's financial statements. And that comment is about how technically the police pension fund should utilize the same actuarial report as the city. However, the police pension fund is governed by a separate board, and they have chosen not to do so, and we do not have the authority to direct them to. The second comment in the letter reports which funds are over budget. This happens because the city is typically budgeted on a cash basis, which means that expenses are recorded when they're actually paid, whereas our audit is performed on an accrual basis of accounting, which means that expenditures are recorded when the underlying economic transaction occurs. So this often causes timing differences between our budget and our audit, which can cause funds to be over budget. On a cash basis, these funds are within budget. So this was the case with the North Mattis TIF fund. There was just some timing differences in accounts payable, which led the fund to be over budget. The next is the fire pension fund, and the difference here was due to higher than anticipated benefit payments due to more retirees and disability claims. And then the final fund is the workers' compensation fund. And this is once again due to timing differences. And this is because we are required to record as a liability all future expenses related to workers' comp claims that were incurred before June 30th. And then in addition, expenses in general in this fund were much higher this year due to a higher number of workers' compensation claims than expected, as well as an increased severity and longevity of those claims. So the last comment indicates that the workers' comp fund had a deficit fund balance. And once again, this is common. It typically happens every year, and it's due to the recording of that liability for all those future claims. And on a cash basis, the fund balance is positive, but because of this additional liability on the audit, it typically shows as negative. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Jamie Wilkie of Lauterbach and Amen to go through the audit opinions.
Thank you, Kay. Good evening. We appreciate you having us this evening. Just a couple of more letters that we as the auditors are required to issue each year, and I briefly want to cover those and then certainly open it up for any questions. But I want to start this evening. I know Kay had thanked the team, but just to reiterate, this is one of the most well-prepared audits that we walk into. We audit about 100 municipalities in the state of Illinois. The team here is always well prepared. Adjustments have been made. They've addressed technical issues. So I certainly want to thank the team, and I know there's lots more behind the scenes for all of their efforts. So thank you, ladies. I do want to just discuss briefly a little bit further the independent auditor's opinion. Current state statute in Illinois does require the city to undertake an independent audit. That is supposed to be done within a six-month window after the close of the fiscal year. So this evening we have presented, as indicated, a clean or what we call unmodified opinion. That is the highest level opinion that the city can earn each year. As we come in to do our testing, we have two primary goals. Number one, to ensure that the financial statements that the city team has provided are in fact materially correct. That is indicated by that unmodified or clean opinion. As part of that annual process, we are also required to take a look at overall city internal controls. So can we rely upon the processes, the procedures that are in place to make sure that those financial numbers are in fact materially correct? So certainly if we had any areas of concern, red flags, testing that went against what we were expecting to see, we would have to have those communications with council this evening. And as indicated by both ladies, we had no findings. So truly a clean audit opinion. As part of the audit, we also issue what we call a SAS 114 letter. The SAS 114 letter is really an audit firm's standard communication to those charged with governance. Typically, this is a form letter where we would indicate any disagreements with management, any adjustments that we propose that they were unwilling to post, any discussion of significant estimates throughout the audit financial statements, and there's really nothing to disclose this evening because all of that communication was standard. We really didn't have those types of disclosures that would be required within that annual letter. So a clean SAS 114 letter as well. So certainly happy to open it up for any questions at this point that you might have for the audit firm, but certainly just want to reiterate the clean process, clean opinion, and no internal control findings.
Any technical questions? Anyone in the audience wish to address this issue? Please step forward, state your name and city of residence. Please limit your comments to 5 minutes or less.
Good evening, Ben Leroy Champagne. I'm speaking tonight to call your attention to what I think is a misleading financial picture painted by this financial report. Now, before I go any further, let me stress one thing. While I believe this report is misleading, I do not wish to cast any professional or personal aspersions on the staff or consultants involved in its preparation. There's absolutely no intent to deceive. The people involved in this report have prepared it with integrity and professionalism. I specifically want to thank Carrie for taking the time to answer a few questions I had about this report. She is a credit to this organization. So why does this report mislead you and the public about the city's current financial state? The answer has to do with the accounting standards promulgated by the Government Accounting Standards Board, or GASB, specifically as they relate to the counting of infrastructure. The way the GASB tells cities to account for infrastructure is this. First, count all infrastructure as a financial asset with the construction cost as the value of the asset. Second, apply straight-line depreciation to the value of any assets that have aged. And then third, do not count any infrastructure maintenance obligations as liabilities until work has begun and payments are going out the door. This is a big problem. And this is why I say the problem is with the accounting standards themselves and not the financial professionals who have applied them to your report. The accounting standards are fundamentally rotten. Is infrastructure an asset or a liability? In a non-financial sense, the city absolutely should think of infrastructure as an asset. The city's investment in streets, sidewalks, and stormwater capacity encourages additional private investment in the community, helps people where they need to get where they need to go, and adds value to their property. But in a financial sense, it is completely backwards to think about infrastructure as an asset. To draw a simple analogy, think about the roof of your house. Maybe it's brand new, maybe it's a decade old, maybe it needs to be replaced in the near future. Whatever the case is, you can predict as sure as the sun rises that you will need to replace that roof at some point. So how would you prepare for this as a smart financial steward of your household? Of course, you would estimate the future cost and how far off that cost is. If you know your roof has about a decade left and will cost about $10,000, you would start thinking about how to prep for that bill over the next 10 years. How you decide to save up for that bill is up to you, but it's a cold, hard fact that the bill will inevitably come due. Now, imagine you ran your household finances according to GASB principles, the same ones that produced this report. According to the GASB, you don't need to think about the roof at all when you're planning your finances until the day you hire a roofing company. In fact, the GASB would have you count the amortized cost of your existing roof as a financial asset. Can you see how if you follow GASB principles in your own accounting, you might fail to fully understand your household's own infrastructural finance situation? The report hints at this problem at least partially. At numerous points in the report, it reminds you that the vast majority of the city's reported net position, positive net position, is not all that liquid, and those assets can't be used to cover liabilities or spending obligations. 326 of the city's $378 million net positive position, that's over 85%, is made up of capital assets the city cannot easily liquidate to retire any liabilities. You can't sell the pavement of Mattis Avenue to pay the person who drives the street sweeper down Mattis Avenue. Nevertheless, the report misleadingly counts streets, sidewalks, and sewers as financial assets, with the result that the city's net position looks much rosier than it actually is, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. If the report simply eliminated this spacious counting of infrastructure as financial assets, the city's reported financial position would not look so rosy, but it would be more accurate. However, to achieve full accuracy and transparency, the report should go further and count infrastructure as the financial liability it is. Every street owned by the city of Champaign is a promise from you, our government, to us, the citizens. It's a promise that if I build my house or open my business in a particular location, I should be able to count on my government taking care of the infrastructure we've all paid for, maintaining it as time passes, and replacing it when its design lifespan has expired. Infrastructure is a promise. A promise is an obligation. An obligation is a liability. Infrastructure is a liability. You all know that the city struggles to keep all of its infrastructure in good shape, despite the fact that this is an economically healthy community, despite the fact that you have a brilliant city staff running a wonderfully professional organization. Why is this the case? How do we get here? One major factor is that the city has been relying on incomplete information and misleading accounting standards for decades. You, our council, deserve the best possible information to make financial decisions for our community. Once you have that information, you can start working on real solutions. Please make this the last ACFR you ever accept that hides the infrastructure problems and counts streets you can't spend as financial assets. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address council on this issue? Any council comments? Councilmember Kyle. Deputy Mayor Kyle.
Thank you. The report and the obviously the clean report and the standards that we've talked about for a while. I think that I'm trying to digest the comments because I track them very. I'll save my comments on that just a little bit because I'm digesting what was just discussed. But Interesting. But I want to thank you for the report that you've done, and look forward to perhaps even more commentary on previous comments. How about that? I'll stop there.
Councilmember Pianfetti.
I wanted to thank you for the work that you put into this report and for the audit and for the clean report. I'm confident in the city's transparency and in the work that they do to be good stewards of the taxpayers' money. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you not only for the report, but for all of the work and really, everything that goes into not only preparing the report, but the running the city's finances, particularly over the last few years with all of the COVID money and ARPA money and just keeping all of that straight. It's you've done an amazing job. So thank you for that. I'm sort of a nerd, but this is like, I love this document. So thank you for this document. And I say that because I want everybody who's watching at home or in the audience to know you can get it online. You don't have to have the big hard copy of it, but it contains all this amazing information about the city and descriptions about different things. It's not all just the financial numbers, and so it's a great document if you're curious about your city government. So with that, I think I don't know what our direction is. Just accept it. And
There really is no poll. Yeah. It's really just for informational.
So thank you. And then the next item on our agenda is the historic marker designation program. And Chris, coming. So am I turning it right over to you, Chris? All right, Chris Kester, Public Works.
Hello again, Council. Thank you for bringing this topic back. If you'll recall, in August, we discussed a specific historical memorial designation for 63 Chester, which had several businesses through it over its lifetime that had were determined to have significant impact on the city's culture and history, in addition to transportation and healthcare. Through that program or through that presentation, council had requested that we make that designation, that honorary memorial designation, as well as to bring back a program that would allow for others to request, should they choose, locations to receive this historical memorial designation in the future. So here's a little bit of history, which I just sort of went through. And today we're bringing back the creation of the program. And what we're going to propose is that we model it very similarly to the Honorary Street Program, which has been in place since 2000. Those Honorary Street name designations are limited to individuals, organizations, or entities that have had historic or humanitarian impact on the city. That program also talks about the location having a geographical relationship to the honoree. It also designates them, because they're streets, to being one block in length, and that there can only be one honoree street name designation per location. Also that there's a limit of four per calendar year. And then there's a time limit on those. That's a designation for 10 years before the street is then becomes eligible, or the block, I guess, becomes eligible for someone else to honor someone through that program. The proposed historical memorial program would follow that honorary street program pretty much bullet by bullet with a few changes. We are still working on the design of what we think this will be, because we want it to be something, because the proposal is not to have it limited to 10 years. And I will say that we met with Historic Preservation last Thursday, and they suggested a time limit of 25 to 30 years. So that's something that we'll incorporate their feedback as well as your feedback into that. Realizing that also the information will be added to the city's website where it can live in perpetuity, even if the memorial marker or the memorial designation is not physically visible to the public. And that's similar to the Honoree Street Program. We maintain those street designations that have expired. A few of the differences, that instead of the current process for the honorary street designation request, there's a info-only memo presented, then a study session, then a report to council approving that recommendation. Honorary Historical Memorial will first go to Historic Preservation Commission, where part of their charge to the city's ordinance is to make the determination of whether something should be considered historic or whether the request meets the intent of the program. Currently, they do this sort of on a larger scale with making things known as local landmarks or local designation for even national landmarks. And because this is within that realm, but maybe not quite as formal, it would still fit into their charter. And then the historic preservation recommendation would go directly to council if approved. And as I mentioned before, the desire is to see that extend for longer than a 10-year length. When we bring back a more formal program, we'll have that identified as well as how that information will be viewable on the city's website in perpetuity. I mentioned the input from the 19th. So we're here to present this program to get council input over whether to formalize the program and the process. And then the next steps would be to bring that back with the inaugural memorial. Since it was already approved in 2022, we would do a council bill for initiating the program and then making the first one of the program towards the 63 Chester location. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Technical questions. I actually have one.
Okay.
So it talks about one per location, but could that, I guess, one designation have information about multiple people or multiple events that occurred? It's not sort of one historic event, but one sign. Am I understanding that correctly?
So that was, and I didn't highlight it in red, but that was one of the proposed changes, is that it could, a particular location could have more than one designation, and depending on how the memorial marker appears, there could be more than one in that location. Or, you know, I don't think we'd want to go and edit something. And one example that came up on during historic preservation was Mr. David Monk's Pocket Prairie. And so, you know, a lot of people were familiar with that, where it was located, where currently is Poor Brothers. When that building moved in, or when that tenant moved in, we worked with Mr. Monk to move the Pocket Prairie over into the center of the Second Street detention basin. So there could be a historical memorial designation because of his Pocket Prairie, for example, and I believe there's some glacial rock down there or something. But someone else could recognize the infrastructure itself of the detention basin and how it, you know, how its creation and maintenance helped change sort of the infrastructure of Green Street by removing all the flooding and things like that. So there could be a location that has more than one designation. And because of how the process works, there would likely be more than one memorial marker in its place, as opposed to just taking something down, editing it, and then putting it back up.
Okay, that's fine. Anyone in the audience wish to address this issue? And Chris, you wanna, yep. Please step forward, state your name and city of residence, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less.
Hello, my name is Leslie Krause. I'm a resident of Champaign. I wanted to speak in support of the city's efforts to establish a historic memorial designation program. Champaign is truly a nexus in downstate Illinois with a rich history that deserves to be acknowledged and celebrated. For this reason, I am grateful that the City Council's consideration to memorialize 63 Chester Street, particularly given its historical significance to the LGBTQ community. I was employed as a resident DJ at Chester Street for 10 years. I even have my name tag on. And I also worked at Boltini for 5 years. It was an amazing, wonderful experience, honestly, with so many people of diverse backgrounds. I mean, you really get to learn a lot more about yourself just as much as you learn about other people working at establishments like that. And they were both known as gay-friendly nightlife venues, but they really catered to a wide, diverse crowd, and that's what made them so special. Coming out almost 23 years ago myself, you know, I've seen our nation grow and evolve significantly in the direction of fostering acceptance and tolerance for gender and sexual diversity. Chester Street was truly a place where people from all walks of life could come and feel accepted and included. It was an institution, in some respects, as it came to represent our progressive attitudes that were already taking hold in our nation decades later. It may not have been perfect in every way, but it was certainly unique for its time. And I think that what it stood for, a safe place for people to come and be themselves for so long, even when they were marginalized and misunderstood in society, is worthy of being acknowledged and celebrated. Don't get me wrong, there's still a long way to go, of course, and I'm sure we can openly acknowledge that. But it's these sorts of symbolic gestures that create the stepping stones and start the conversations about progress and change. So they shouldn't be underestimated by any means. In fact, there are currently only a handful of American cities that even have public monuments and memorials designated on acknowledging queer history. New York City is one of the most notable examples. According to the New York City Historic Sites Project, and I quote, "We want to make the point that LGBT history is American history. We want to make an invisible history visible. We're looking at places where cultural events took place, and we're particularly interested in the impact that queer people have made on American culture," end quote. I believe that this is an opportunity, therefore, for Champaign to pave the way ahead of other municipalities in our state. Not unlike when our city first instituted its human rights ordinance, protecting sexual orientation in 1977, one of the first cities in the country to do so, alongside Urbana. And that was decades before there was even a national conversation about these issues. We are once again a leader, placing ourselves on the map and in the history books for the cause for equality and for the benefit of future generations. As I've said so many times before, I'm truly proud to be a lifelong resident of Champaign and to call Champaign my home. I appreciate the City Council's willingness and openness to spearhead this program to give much needed recognition to our cultural heritage. Champaign is truly a one-of-a-kind place for people from all walks of life to live, work, and play. Thank you, and have a nice night.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address this issue? Please step forward.
Hello, my name is John Roma, and I'm a resident of the Southside neighborhood of Champaign. I want to thank the mayor for confessing to be a nerd a few minutes ago, because that's going to give me a little bit of cover. So what I'm going to cover here is really not any, I think Chester Street is a perfect candidate for the first designation. What I'm going to deal with is semantic nitpicks, but I like the program as presented. One thing that kind of put me off is the word memorial. I think of Memorial Day as the day we honor the dead. And we're not necessarily honoring a person or somebody who's not here. I think perhaps we could take a cue from the U of I. They just call them historical markers. Could call them monuments or commemorative locations, something like that. So that's just something to think about. I'm not quite clear about what the distinction is going to be between a landmark and one of these sites. I suspect there's a little bit of overlap. but perhaps this type of designation is earmarked for a location that has significance, but the actual, there's nothing to preserve except memories. So that's another thought too. And in the verbiage on page 2 of the city manager's report, it doesn't mention locales, and I think that would be a perfect inclusion, because we're not honoring the building that's no longer there. We're honoring what went on inside and what it fostered in our diverse community. So just a few little ideas there. The university, like I said, they call them historical markers. Most of them actually have a person associated with them. In this case, that's not terribly necessary. And since we are a high-tech educated community, perhaps it's feasible to put one of these QR codes on the markers so that somebody can come to the city website and learn more. We are a curious community. And I know there are some technical constraints with that, and I am a geek, so I understand those. But I just think this is a wonderful idea, and I just thought I would say a few words and hopefully make it better. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address this issue? Please step forward.
Hi, my name is Audra Martin. I'm a resident of Urbana, and I had no intention of making any comments tonight. I was just here to support my grandson in a Cub Scout thing that he was doing. Just talking about Chester Street, and I just wanted to kind of show my support for that, because when I was a young adult, it was one of my fondest memories to go there and dance. You know, I wasn't a college student, I wasn't a townie, I didn't really fit in anywhere, but going to Chester Street and just see street dancing was absolutely fantastic. So I just want to really say that I was so happy to learn that that was likely to be the first historical marker. I'm all for it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Council comment? Anybody? Council Member Beck.
I just want to, first of all, say thanks to Chris. You've been the champion of this. I appreciate that. I'm going to brought it to as an idea. You were excited to help make it happen. And so I do want to just kind of go over some of the comments that were made. I think that, you know, calling it like a historical marker or something other than the memorial does make sense. Because although some of these may be in memoriam, some of them may not be in memoriam. And maybe there is a way for us to be a little bit more distinctive about how someone might choose or why someone might choose to request a street designation as to why they might choose a historical marker designation. And maybe we can figure out a pathway to make those a little different. That would be a little bit more, exact for people, so they would have a roadmap of what might be the better designation to request for the thing that they're wanting the marker for. I'm excited that this is going to be part of the historic, I want to get their name right, Historic Preservation Commission, and because I think that, you know, they are rightly so the keepers of our history and are the ones that kind of guide our guideposts for what could be potentially very good designations for our community. And then also the fact that they also have most of the folks that sit on that that board, they are very knowledgeable about the history of our community, not only the built fabric of our community, but also the day-to-day living that has happened here as a result of the rich lives that people have lived. So thanks so much for this, and I appreciate your efforts on it, and I look forward to seeing it come to us as a ordinance.
Anyone else? Councilmember Fulmer.
Yeah, I too just want to thank you and folks who came out and spoke about the significance of this for various reasons. I agree. Memorial, now that Mr. Roma has pointed out, I agree that I think it makes sense to maybe think about that. and I also do think that mentioning a place or a locale also makes sense in the policy. The only thing that I had been thinking about is, like, do we need to be considerate of how we take it back if some newly learned information about that place or that thing comes to light. I don't know if that needs to be something that we consider now or not, but just thought I'd throw it out there. But thanks so much for all the work you've done, Chris.
Anyone else? Councilmember Fulmer, I want to thank you because I hadn't thought about that, but I had been part of Mayor's Institute on City Design seminars on the Civil War and historic statues and trying to make determinations about that. And so I it makes sense to maybe have some type of a review, even if it goes to HPC and then to us or something. I think that's brilliant. So thank you for raising that. But I'm excited for this as well. So thank you. Our poll tonight is to direct staff to prepare a resolution to be placed on the regular meeting agenda to creating the Historic Memorial Designation Program. Councilmember Fulmer.
Yes.
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 And yes, you have direction. And before we go to audience participation, I want to mention that Councilmember Bruno is traveling, but Councilmember Gladney is actually out ill tonight, so that's where they are. And we are now at the point of our meeting for general audience participation. If anyone wants to speak, please step forward, state your name and city of residence. Please limit your comments to 5 minutes or less.
Good evening. My name is Christina D'Angelo. I'm a resident of the city of Champaign. And I am also here as the staff representative of AFSCME Council 31 that works with the AFSCME represented employees here at the city of Champaign. And I was hoping to present to you all a little about our members and our contract negotiations that we are presently in. If you look around the room, I could ask our members to stand up so that you can see these are the AFSCME employees that we represent, right? So we have the 911 dispatchers that answer our phone calls when we're in need. We have Public Works that make sure we have clean and safe streets. We have members from CPD who support all of our citizens and all of the office support that help the city run. We hoped to have more people here, but with the snow approaching quickly, many of our employee members are out preparing for night shifts to make sure that those of us that have to go to work in the morning can get there safely, get our kids to school, and you know, if you have a doctor's appointment or you want to go to the grocery store. As the council knows, we are in negotiations right now. We have been bargaining since early fall, later than we had hoped, and our members have been working without a contract since July. Our team, our bargaining team, has worked tirelessly with management through the interest-based program to work through some really, really challenging issues, and we are now at the point of general economics where we have presented what we believe to be an extremely fair package to settle these negotiations. Our bargaining team this week made what they considered to be a quite huge concession in the interest of settling this negotiation so that our members can get their well-deserved increases and all of the things that we have negotiated so far with the city. And unfortunately, we left that session with very little movement from the city's bargaining team. And instead of a tentative agreement, our members left both disappointed and insulted by the response that we got. So we are here today, and I am here today, to ask the City Council to call to your team and to reconsider what you have been willing to agree to. We think what we have on the table is extremely reasonable, and it honors the work that these employees do for all of us, including myself, who've been a resident of this city for 12 years. So that is what I have to say tonight, and thank you for your time. I hope that you will reconsider what you have on the table.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address? Please step forward, state your name and city of residence.
My name is August Fogus. I live in St. Joseph. I've been an employee of the city of Champaign and Metcalf since 2005. While this job has afforded me many things over the years, it has also caused me to sacrifice many things, from family functions to vacations with friends, other birthday parties, just to name a few. I stand before you tonight to simply ask that you see we are no different than the police department when it comes to our sacrifices, hard work, stress, and abuses we have endured over the last couple of years. During this time, during this time and the preceding years, we have been chronically understaffed. I have worked over 450 hours of overtime on average for the 18 years at MECHED. All of us have worked exorbitant amounts of overtime. Our understaffing is actually more percentage-wise than those of CPD that you've just recently begun to address. During the time changes have come to the community, that's changed the laws, the policies and procedures of the various police departments have changed, and they're understaffed. They're also navigating the issues of the day, and believe it or not, that actually drastically and directly affects the way we do our job at MECHED every day. This in turn creates more stress and workload on our end. I've never done this job for any kind of recognition from the city or the community. I'm just coming to you tonight to just try to recognize the important job that we do, and hopefully we can get a fair compensation and work under a contract. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Please step forward.
Hi, my name is Amelia Martin and I live in St. Joseph. I've worked for the city of Champaign at MECHED for 11 years. And when I began this job, we were fully staffed with very little overtime. And it was explained to me at length what shift work was and what it meant. I would miss holidays, have to rework the daycare schedule, and work around other schedule-related topics that come from not working your normal 9-to-5. What I did not anticipate was the staffing shortage and copious amounts of overtime that I would end up facing. My immediate and extended families, they plan holidays around my work schedule so I can be present. Sorry. But their thoughtfulness goes to waste when I'm given a mandate to be at work the day of the party, sometimes with a single hour's notice. I've missed my child's class parties, award ceremonies, and some sporting events. I've stayed up for 36 hours or more with maybe a single hour nap, so I didn't miss the state semifinals that were scheduled between two 12-hour mandated shifts where I had 8 hours off in between. It's a juggling act that I do not have to perform, but I choose to. I choose to continue to work at MECHED. Some of us have lived and know the potential that this workplace holds when we're staffed appropriately. I love my job and I'm devoted to the work that I do and the service that I give back to my community. It's a job that's extremely hard day after day. We are faced with life-threatening and life-altering crises multiple times per day. We're faced with life and we're faced with death, and it's a roll of the dice anytime we answer the phone or the radio. I know that you have a basic grasp on what we do as dispatchers, but very few people know the mental load that we carry and how our mental health suffers from that. I personally have been diagnosed with anxiety, depression, and PTSD due to events that I've endured at this job, but again, I continue to choose to do so. When you hear our speeches, my hope is that you hear and understand just how important our job is. We're the unseen first responders and first point of contact for every non-emergency and emergency call in Champaign County. I ask that you please put the same thought and care into our situation as you have the police department. Currently, the city is offering us a retention bonus that is half of what police officers received. It'll be paid out in 2 installments 2 years apart. They're also attempting to revoke our Me Too clause. We deserve to have our staffing issues addressed and be monetarily compensated for the stressors that we're facing the same way the police department has been. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address council? Please step forward. Please state your name and city of residence. Please limit your comments to 5 minutes or less.
Hello, my name is Mindy Beasley. I live in Homer. I'm going to get down to the nitty-gritty for you guys. I've been at MECHED for 12 years. When I was hired, we were fully staffed, just like Amelia. And as the years have gone by, our staffing has dwindled every year. I went from being able to take time off when needed for family functions to little overtime required, probably less than 100 hours a year. To our allowable time off being cut due to staffing shortages and working an average of 400 hours a year in the last 3 years. 400 hours. And I'm not the only one. It's all of us. It's all of us. Our work environment has critically and drastically changed for the worst. I am exhausted. We are exhausted. We don't just want, but we need. We deserve a higher economic package than what you're offering. Why in the world will we want to wait until October of this year for $5,000 and then two more years in 2025 when the contract is up, when we deserve it now? And we deserve more than that. We deserve the $20,000 that the Champaign Police Department received. We have endured more mental health callers since COVID. Over and over and over, we talk to people that want to kill themselves. Every day. Our call volume is higher with less people working. How in the world does that make sense? We have to reduce our minimum staffing on nights because there's no one to work. As an essential worker during COVID, we continue to show up, continue to work understaffed during our during overstress times, and continue to work a massive amount of overtime. This includes combining radio channels and not giving appropriate and safe service. It is everyone's goal for every single first responder to go home at the end of shift, and that needs to include us as well. I have had night sweats, nightmares, and anxiety from stress I endure at this job. I am on medication for it, just like many of my coworkers. Yes, I know it's a part of our job, but in my opinion, that's just what the COVID economic money is for, and we want our fair share. We have 66% staffing of fully trained and independent TCs, telecommunicators. We are down one third, 11 of 33 positions. I'd like for you to listen, and this has been years. This isn't new. This has been years. I'd like for you to listen and think about this scenario. Let's say we have a house fire with people trapped inside. We're on the phone listening to the screams of children not being able to escape, not to mention five other bystanders calling in to tell us about the fire. At the same time, a mother calls in that her one-year-old has been shot. So we're giving CPR to the child and getting the help, the required help sent out. Yes, that did happen. I was at work. That has taken both our call takers out, so now we have dispatchers answering the phones. Okay, when all of a sudden an officer calls out shots fired. And at the same time, one of you are calling about a loved one that you are with in cardiac arrest and not breathing. The dispatcher answers the phone. Guess who's answering that call? Who do you think we should give priority to? Who? That is the stressor of our position. And we don't just do this every other day, once a week. It is every single day. Every day. Yes, in a fully staffed center, it could still happen. But in a fully staffed center, we could handle it. We shouldn't be overworked and extremely overstressed every second of the day. This isn't a one-time scenario. Like I said, it's a daily occurrence of being in this kind of a stressed state. A police officer goes from call to call to call. They don't have to handle three separate emergencies at the same exact time like we do. That is my point. With the continuous rise in gun and gang violence in Champaign, to the mental health crisis created alone from COVID, and yes, to the murder of one of our very own officers, we were there side by side with our officers handling and coordinating everything behind the scenes. I understand that you don't have a clue what goes on there, but I'm trying to just give you an inkling, a hint, come sit with us, anything, so we can show you what is happening there, the stress that we're under. We want more. We deserve more. I hope this opens your eyes a lot wider so that you can find in your hearts and budget to give us an economic package that we deserve and so desperately need. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Aaron Allen. I live in St. Joseph, Illinois. And I thank you right now for listening to my concerns. I've worked at the City of Champaign in Public Works for 21 years. I am the Vice President of AFSCME Local 1960. And on behalf of my union brothers and sisters, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble here. I'm here to ask you guys to see what they go through all the time, all the time. I have sat with them. I've went over and sat with them through these calls. And I'm like, how are they doing this? How are they doing it? It's unbelievable. And I think that they are just looked at as status quo. We're just going to keep rolling. And it affects this man right here's people who are on the street. We're close. We were really close to an agreement with the city. Really close. That reflected the current economic conditions of today. What I'm seeking is your help to guide city staff and give them the authority to sign a contract that remains equitable and fair for the future of AFSCME. The other thing is, and it was brought up by Christine, there would be a ton more of yellow shirts in here tonight. But you know why they're not here? Because they're out there for our citizens, and they work for the city of Champaign. They work for you guys. Okay? They got off at 3, and they're going to be back in at 10, and they're going to work all night. Okay, they did an 8-hour day. They're back in. They'll be there till 11:30 tonight because infrastructure. We're going to keep the roads open. We're going to keep it flowing so that we have tax revenue, right? Think about stuff like that. When you see the economic proposal we gave back to them and then to be told it's not good enough. We weren't even met halfway. I please beg you to give your city staff, your negotiating team, the right and direction to help us. All of them. Us at Public Works, your city accountants, the people, the PSRs at the police department. We need your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
I'm Jacob Martin. I'm a resident of Champaign. How are we going to clear the roads after the snowstorm tonight?
So this is an opportunity for you to give public comment, but we don't answer questions. But I bet some of those guys over there might be able to answer your question for you. Thanks for coming up. Is there anybody else who wants to address the council? Seeing none, any council comment? Oh, come on up.
Good evening, council. My name is Brian Martin. I live in St. Joseph, Illinois. I am the spouse of Amelia at MetCAD. Mine will be brief. I just wanted to give a different perspective and shed a little more light on what they go through. And everything they were saying about the stressors and everything they deal with,
while they're there, doesn't stay there. It comes home every single day. I've been, when Amelia was on nights, woken up in the morning because she had to leave early because an officer got shot, to her crying and absolutely losing her mind, and trying to figure out how she was going to deal with that, and having to navigate how I'm going to help her deal with that, because I don't know. Nobody knows. But this stuff doesn't just happen at work and stay at work. These people live this. It is a lifestyle. It's not a job. But thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Thank you all for coming. Is there any council comment? City Manager.
Thank you, Your Honor. The administration no longer needs a closed session for collective negotiating matters this evening, but still needs a closed session to discuss the employment, compensation, and performance of an employee.
So we need a motion.
Your Honor, I move that we move into closed session to discuss the compensation of an employee, followed by adjournment.
I think it's compensation and performance.
And performance of an employee, followed by an adjournment.
Please call the roll.
Councilmember Fulmer?
Yes.
Enigas?
Yes.
Kyles?
Yes.
Pianfetti?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Finan?
Yes. We are recessed into closed session to be followed by adjournment.